Oh, hello, this is The Truth Speaks. Sorry, I'm Dylan, and I'm joined by Vinny Eastwood. Vinny, we got you?
Yes, you do, yes, you do. I'm just also looking at the live stream here, and it appears to have just failed on us.
I think there's a delay.
Oh, okay, okay. Is it like a several-minute delay? Because it looks like it's been off for about 40 seconds.
That's strange. Yeah. Sydney, are we good?
You're good.
All right. We're going to be talking about John Keith. I know that's your favorite topic, Benny.
It really is. Well, in fact, have you ever noticed that sometimes your favorite topic is just the least favorite topic? You know, how some people like their favorite topic is Britney Spears because they just hate her that much?
Yeah, I've noticed that. It's kind of funny.
Well, there's a good quote from a movie called Human Traffic. He says, "The things that we love brought us together, but so do the things that we hate." And I don't know. A lot of people have said, "Oh, Vinny, why do you hate him?" And I was like, you know, it's not like I really hate the Prime Sinister, John Key. I just spend several hours a day in deep, intense meditation, sending good psionic vibes to loose skateboards, slippery staircases, banana peels, and marbles and things of that nature, just to help them get in his way on that day and you know, just gently move him on the journey to a broken spine and eventually death, you know. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Jeez. I don't know.
There's no hate involved here, you know. It's all done in a very loving, caring, Christian way. But the the thing about him is just, we've come across this information just recently. In fact, we recorded a show about it about yesterday, I think, or the day before. I'm sorry, days are kind of blurring together for me now, but somebody sent an Official Information Act request. It's our, I'm not sure what the US equivalent to that is, you know, how you can send questions to the government and they kind of required by law to answer them. And the question was, is John Key a US citizen or does he have dual citizenship? And his own office doesn't know and won't answer. Now, you'd figure if you were working for a guy and he was the head of a country that, I don't know, they'd know whether or not he was a citizen of your country, you know, maybe
seems
beforehand.
Like that would be seems that would be pretty important.
He's been leading our country for like 8+ years now, and they don't know what country he has his loyalty to. Now, technically, it's not illegal under New Zealand law to be a dual citizen and be a member of parliament because they changed the law a while ago to allow that to be possible. And that means, however, that if he is a US citizen and if he is the Prime Minister of New Zealand, it means he actually breaks US law, which doesn't allow you to place your loyalties to a country other than the United States if you have citizenship with them. All right? So he might not be breaking New Zealand law by being a US citizen, but he's breaking a US law by being a New Zealand citizen who serves a foreign government. Don't you think? That's a little bit a little bit dodgy?
And it's questionable that they didn't answer. It almost kind of convicting him with their silence.
Yeah. I mean, all you got to do is basically force a denial in this industry and people kind of like, you know, they go belly up because you, whatever somebody's not comfortable in answering, it's because they think that you're not going to like the answer. Generally speaking. And it was quite funny though, because you have a look at the parallels between Barack Obama and John Key. You wouldn't think that there are any, but there actually are. First of all, they were both elected in 2008. They both represent a party whose colour is blue. Their campaign platform was change. And they both borrowed more money than all previous leaders of their countries combined in their first term alone. And they both seem to violate the constitutionality of our nations more than any other leader throughout history. And incidentally, these guys are golf buddies.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree on the constitutionality of it. I think George Bush might have done it more than Obama, but on the rest of it, I completely agree.
Well, maybe you haven't heard about the NDAA, which you can now execute any U.S. citizen anywhere in the entire world without a warrant on the president's say-so.
Obama's
been able to do things that Bush and his cronies probably would have dreamed of, but never thought possible. It's like, man, I wish I was black, then I would have gotten away with it.
I mean, I'm only arguing because Patriot Act, NSA, TSA, Homeland Security, those were all pushed through by that administration. Certainly the NDAA is the most unconstitutional out of all of them. But I think when you added up the total number of unconstitutional acts, maybe about equal, actually.
Let's not forget, Obama didn't have 9/11 to justify everything. And also, his term isn't over yet.
Very true. Very true.
And he's going to sign America up to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which will give the Fortune 500 companies the right to dictate all of your policy, and if the country makes any policy whatsoever that in any way impedes corporate profits in some way, shape, or form, let's say, for example, somebody's dumping toxic waste and they make a law making it illegal to dump toxic waste, and it actually messes with a company like Monsanto's products or sales or something like that because they're dumping toxic waste illegally, then they can sue you for the end of time for an unlimited amount in the world court, which they pay for. And it's not only America that's signing up to this. New Zealand is as well, and Canada, and I think like 9 other countries.
The UK, Japan, Spain.
Oh, no, you're thinking about a different one. You're thinking about the Transatlantic Partnership Agreement, which is a different one. There's the Trans-Pacific and the Transatlantic. That can be a little confusing, but just imagine it's like a porno video where you're getting taken from both angles, okay? And it's kind of like the Chinese finger cuffs, you know? You ain't getting your fingers out of there, buddy. And once it's in place, there is no way out of it, ever. And not to mention, it's all secret. So we don't even know how bad it is. And why is it secret? Because the corporation said, well, bro, people will get really pissed off. Like the citizens who elect the leaders who are signing these documents and things of that nature might not be happy if they knew what we were doing. So the governments have agreed globally to keep it secret for a full 5 years, even after it's signed. So you will literally be ruled by a secret treaty that will remain secret while it's dominating you.
Sounds familiar, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Fair enough. I'm glad you brought up the TPP. That's something I've wanted to talk about for a while, but really couldn't find very many people who knew the topic well.
Yeah. See, I think just the TPPA is a large document, and in my opinion, it should be used as TP when we need to PP at a PPTA meeting. It's really that useless. Much unlike the PPTA. But the other element here is John Key's business history working in foreign exchange for a long period of time. Sorry, I've been on radio about an hour just before doing this, and I'm going to have to do two right afterwards without breaks. So that's like 5 straight hours of radio. So if I get a little bit, that's why. I think his banking history is probably the reason why my channel was actually censored. And I think it's for a good reason, really. It was starting to go viral. It was getting, I think, 1,000-plus hits a day for a political video in New Zealand. That's, like, unheard of. And even doing my channel for 7 years, and I had the most subscribed channel in New Zealand, even more than the New Zealand Herald, which is our equivalent of the New York Times. You know how the New York Times and Associated Press have their own YouTube channel, right? And they got thousands upon thousands of subscribers for them because they're a mainstream media entity. They've been around for over 100 years or whatever. Well, the New Zealand Herald had about less than 10,000 subscribers. I had over 16,000, and I'd been around for 7 years, and they've been around for 150 years. And they are the largest. Their website, newzealandherald.co.nz, is, I think, in the top 8 websites in New Zealand. And I was beating them on YouTube by my frickin' self. And they got me deleted. And that really, really is not good in terms of the signs of what's happening to democracy here. And have a look at, say, Nikki Hager, who's a famed New Zealand journalist. He wrote a book called Dirty Politics. In this book, he was releasing leaked emails from the Prime Minister's office and others in that vein. They were actually hiring a blogger named Cameron Slater to put out disinformation and to put dirty politics on the agenda, as in, like, dirty tactics. And they also disclosed that the reasons why they were doing this is because they knew it would make people not want to vote anymore. And guess who votes last? Or sorry. Guess who the last people who will be convinced to not vote are? The ones who are voting for you. The dirty politician. They know this. So if they put, like, say, 10 people off voting, they know that at the very least, 6 of those would be people that would vote for their opposition. So it's actually a very intelligent move to keep mudslinging, calling people names, like conspiracy theorist, to keep attacking others, to keep laughing at everybody, because it puts people off politics in general, and their supporters are so frickin' stupid that they will continue to support you until the day that you kill them. Right? And soon enough, our countries, all of them, this isn't just happening in New Zealand, of course, because guess what? Guess who we learned all those dirty politics games from?
Yeah. Us.
That's right. You frickin' bastards.
Well, you know? We are the experts.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to scumbaggery, you got it down, mate. You know, there's a methodology, son. I've got this great difficulty in actually differentiating the American leadership from the New Zealand leadership now, because there patently isn't one, is there?
Not much. I mean, I think the only people that could compare to New Zealand and America is David Cameron. Over in the UK, I think they're the only ones who can keep up with us.
Or at least they're trying, you know. I mean, the empire's long and old, and it's dusty and musty, and they've got so many pedophiles over there in the parliament, and so many scandals and whatnot. It's almost like there's actually some real journalists in that country. And
oh, not in the UK.
Yeah. Hence the term almost. And because it's not really the mainstream journalists that are making these big discoveries. It's actually alternative media, the people who aren't actually being paid to lie to you, basically.
What a concept.
Yeah. I know, it's strange, isn't it?
People who aren't paid to lie tell the truth.
Yeah.
Interesting concept.
Well, ultimately, I think it was when I started in activism, that was kind of one of my conclusions, is that nobody's going to pay me a crap load of money to just sit there and tell people the truth and actually help people in their lives and actually care. Nobody's going to pay me to do that. And sure enough, nobody has. I mean, if you want to be rich, ladies and gentlemen, and you're really talented and you're really good at your jobs or whatever, you know, get a job selling bullshit for a living. All right? I apologize for the swearing. But for goodness sake, that's the honest truth of it, isn't it? If you want to sell BS for a living, you'll make more money than you can ever conceive of. You will be like Scrooge McDuck incarnate. You'll be able to like swim around in your swimming pools full of gold coins and all of that kind of stuff, and nobody will ever bring you to justice, you know?
And nobody will ever realize it because they'll be too busy arguing with each other.
Yeah. It's like on 9/11. Some people have come out saying it's nukes. Some people have come out saying it's directed energy weapons. Others have come out saying controlled demolition and nanothermite and all of that kind of stuff. And they keep arguing with each other and calling each other COINTELPRO the whole time. And guess what the establishment, who probably used all of those devices simultaneously, are doing? Sitting back laughing their ass off and just going, I didn't realize that if we totally destroyed this building in like four different ways at the same time, there'd be four different groups of people that are arguing that one did it and all the others didn't and everybody else is a lying shell. Oh, jet fuel. Oh, that's a good one. I mean, you know, what do you want, some hot sauce on your pancake breakfast, do you?
Well, I'm not sure about the use of directed energy weapons, but it's possible.
Well, the only one that explains the toasty cars. Have you heard about that, bro? That was quite interesting. Like, cars that were, like, literally exact lines on them had been burned to a crisp, and the other half of the car, totally pristine. And the interior of the car, totally pristine.
That's odd.
Really now, odd.
I didn't even hear about that one. Yeah. Gonna have to redo my research.
Yeah, man. Dr. Judy Woods written a book about it. And unfortunately, the book's not available on PDF or anything. She won't release it. You know how some people have personal problems? You know, they're doing the right thing, but they've been traumatized by getting sabotaged and demonized and attacked a lot of the time, and it starts to destroy who they are as a person and their ability to cope and get along with other people?
Yeah.
I believe the same thing has happened to Dr. Judy, and it's very sad. Because her research, and well, at least the most of it that I've seen, seems to be very, very credible, which is why I'm not really going to rule it out. And people always go, oh, it's just space beams and all of that kind of stuff. You're like Buck Rogers. And I say, bro, Buck Rogers was like back in like the 20s or 30s or something. It's 2014 now. I mean, do you think that technology's like just kind of stopped developing? You know, or do you think that the military is like not way in advance of everything that they're telling us?
Well, I'm also not going to rule out direct energy weapons. I'll consider every possibility, but I really want to see a little more proof for the directed energy
weapons.
You'll
have to look through the evidence, and there's a lot of it. And that's the other difficult thing about researching into it, is that unless you actually have the testimonies from firefighters who saw their boots melting on their feet and felt no heat, you know, it's just like, what can cause that? And I think John Heisner, I forget the guy's name, but he was a scientist back in the 60s and 70s, and he got together all of these old stuff from the Navy yards and things like that, you know, just tech that they throw away, and repaired a whole lot of it. And he started to do these experiments with radio frequency technology and static fields and things like that. And I actually met a friend who was taken out into the middle of the desert with this guy and a number of other people just to witness these experiments in a kind of safe and controlled environment. And they had like a big file, you know, the things that you like rub on other steel, and it turns it into kind of flakes, and you kind of like wear it away, you file it down sort of thing. Well, you just had one of those on the ground, and then he turned the device on, and this file started to levitate very, very gently just into the air. And then he turned the knob over a different dial, and then it started to glow white hot. And then he turned it off, and the thing dropped to the ground, and then he instantly picked it up on the metal end, and it was cold. And the next experiment they did, he levitated it up, flicked another dial, and the file actually separated into three different pieces and floated separately. He then turned the dial back on, and they reconnected and then fell to the ground, and he picked it up instantly again, and it was complete. So the kind of technology that this guy developed, some believe have been replicated by U.S. military, either through a surveillance of him or something like that. It's just there's some real weird stuff that goes on in this world, and I'm very, very concerned that the fact is we're not informed about it. I reckon the more informed humanity is about the weirdest stuff that exists, the less confused we'll be. And unfortunately, because there's a lack of information out there being come through in a constant stream sort of thing, it means that the possibility of things like this existing has generally been suppressed in the mind of the public. Now, that said, activism and consciousness awareness raising, like I was trying to do, getting back on the John Key thing, was essential to awakening people. However, the election was a bit of a farce. There have been widespread rumours of corruption, vote rigging, and this, that, and the other. No proof has actually been produced as yet. But the fact of the matter is, a man who comes in, who every second word he says is a lie, and passes two laws per day, usually under urgency, without democratic accountability, a person who has denied people the rights of referendums to be able to actually say what they think about particular issues over and over and over again, has been caught lying so many times that it's just not even funny, has gotten the country into more debt, astronomically more debt than we've ever been in before. That's going from $8 billion to $80 billion. $84 billion, sorry, in less than 8 years. And not including the $112 billion, I think it was, billion worth of derivatives debts that was on the books in 2011. They've now gone off the books, and they must be growing elsewhere as well. So we're a country of 4 million people, and we officially have $84 billion in debt. That's like 30 grand for every man, woman, and child. How many people in this country have just a spare 30 grand? They'll be like, yeah, I'll help chip in to pay off the national debt. Not on your Nelly. There's bugger all people like that in this country. And those who do have that, and those who could probably pay the shares of other people for national debt and everything like that, basically
causing it.
They're either the people causing it, or they haven't caused it and they've actually worked really hard for their money, and they don't see the reason why they should give up what they've worked hard for to pay off the debts of corrupt politicians who made the debt out of nothing.
You know? I can agree with that, actually. In a lot of ways, I think that's accurate for them.
Yeah, because I really am getting tired of this tendency to hate, quote-unquote, the rich, right? As if having a certain amount of coin suddenly means you have no conscience, no backbone, no morality. It's just a fallacy, and I think it's been perpetuated, particularly by communist manifesto lovers, because there's this big thing about class war. And what they don't realize is that if you go after the rich, you will undoubtedly miss the super, super rich, who are actually people who you can prove don't have morality, who you can prove commit large quantities of crimes. The problem is, although you can prove that they're guilty, a court will not accept them. They have control of the courts. They have control of the lawyers. They have control of the governments. They have control of the senators, the congressmen, everybody. And this is the real difficulty that we're dealing with here. How exactly do you beat an enemy who controls all of the mechanisms by which those particular enemies were traditionally brought to justice? How do you convict a criminal who owns the justice system?
Yeah.
You see, and the thing is,
it's a tough question.
Public awareness, I believe, is the way through this. Now, I may not have the greatest effect, and there's probably others out there who are better than me in many, many ways at raising public awareness about particular issues, about raising the consciousness level so that people are actually prepared to accept that the world isn't all sunshine and rainbows. You know, I've got this crazy idea that I can help the world by trying, you know? That's it.
I've got the crazy concept of thinking I can help by lending my voice.
Yeah. And I think the problem with most people is that they choose to not try. I don't know what happened in their life that made them think that not trying means that they would succeed in anything. I don't get it.
Well, yeah, I've heard a whole bunch of excuses. I've heard, I'm tired, I don't want to do this because it seems pointless. I've heard all of it. And frankly, it's just not true. It's only an impossible situation until you get up and try.
Yeah. Well, I think it's only something that people are willing to refuse because they don't have a gun to their head. I mean, really, that's it. We haven't suffered enough. We're just all comfortable and wanting to sit back and chill out and have fun and drink beer and eat chips and watch some TV.
I'm not sure if it's better in New Zealand, but it's not comfortable here.
Mm. Well, maybe you don't live in a house where you have like a television in absolutely every single room and more Diet Coke in your fridge than some description of a gas station. Because suddenly, I think what's happening here is the diet has been almost deliberately attacked in America. The ability to actually get nutritious food that will allow you to stay healthy and allow you to have enough nutrients so that your brain can carry messages across the synapse and allow you to actually process complex thoughts. I think that food supply is deliberately under attack and has been under attack for a long while, and it's almost been conquered. The entire food supply has almost been conquered by those kind of nutritionless dead foods that will make mindless and soon to be dead people.
Well, it's all Monsanto doing that.
Mm.
And maybe not all Monsanto, but 95% of the attacks on the food is Monsanto.
Yeah, that's true. I call them moron Santo because if you wanted to invest on them, you'd have to be a moron.
Or you could call them Mon Satan. Whichever one works.
Yeah, potato, potato.
Pretty much.
I mean, I've got this idea that if you want to actually make sure that things like Monsanto or the New World Order or any concept whatsoever doesn't actually come to fruition and get their global goals for destroying the world put in place, then ultimately you've really got to have a look and think about how you're resisting the New World Order, right? And the thing that people are asking me is, like, how do I resist the New World Order? How do I do that? And my answer is, well, how many ways is the New World Order or Monsatan or any of those other scumbags currently screwing you? And the answer is, in every single way. So how do you then resist something that's screwing you in every single way? Resisting in any way you want, any way you can.
Yeah, everyone has their strengths. I mean, for me it's radio, for you it's activism outside of the computer and on the radio, but everyone has their own way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the point. And I've been using this quote quite a lot. In fact, I used it on the show just before coming on this broadcast here, is something I heard on the United We Strike radio broadcast, that everybody can do something, but nobody can do everything. And I believe that it's just kind of taking responsibility just for your little corner, you know. If you're in America, fight to save America. And if you're in a small community and you feel like you can fight to save that, then do that, you know?
Yeah. Fight to save whatever you think you can save.
Yeah. I mean, whatever's right in front of you, whatever you're passionate about, whatever you're willing to lose sleep in order to accomplish, whatever you're willing to give up your comfort, your safety, whatever you're willing to give up your life for, that's what you should be doing. And you shouldn't really compromise on that point. That's the real difficulty I find, is because as somebody who's taken that path, and same as you, Dylan, it's almost like we feel alone sometimes.
Sometimes, but it's a growing community, and that's helpful. But I don't think there are very many that are willing to put down everything for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was ironically Alex Jones who kind of got me into all of this. I was just kind of getting angry all the time, because I was just listening to his broadcast all the time, and it's just anger, fear, anger, fear, anger, fear, anger, fear. Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong with anger or fear. A lot of people think that there is. I disagree, absolutely.
Speaking of fear, is there any Ebola hype up in New Zealand?
Well, there might be. I just don't watch the news. So, there was a really good Facebook picture I saw. There was a dude watching TV, and on TV, the newscaster's got their arms flailing in the air going, "Oh, my God, how do we reduce the terror?" And the guy goes, the guy points the remote at the TV and goes, "Click." See, that's how you reduce the terror. Turn off that damn box, man. Sweet mercy. Something full of programming that keeps you in a box, that's broadcast out of a box, is not going to be conducive to you changing the frickin' world. I'm sorry. you can spend 18 hours a day watching TV, and I can guarantee you, you won't change a damn thing about the world or your own life by doing so.
Or get any smarter. In fact, it'll probably have the reverse effect.
Yeah. Unless you're watching, like, a full-on documentary channel or something like that. But even then, like, we have Sky Television in New Zealand. I think it's, like, an Australian company or whatever. You know, you guys know it as cable. And it's just like, my wife went over to my friend's place the other day, and he's got Sky, and she'd been away from TV for so long that she only watches things that she actually finds interesting, only watches things that she actually finds cool. And there were something like 300 channels to choose from, and she couldn't find a single thing that was interesting or cool. Right? Mm. That is the illusion of choice that so many channels gives you. All it is giving you different colored M&Ms. None of them are good for you. None of them have got any nutritional value.
And none of them taste any different.
Yeah. All right. So just scarf the whole bag. It ain't gonna improve anything one iota. It's designed specifically to just sit there and waste your time. And I think this is why the election in New Zealand turned out like it did. You know, the guy's like the worst criminal in this country's leadership gets elected for a third term. And people love him, absolutely fawning over themselves. There was even a poll, something like the majority of women polled thought that John Key, the Prime Minister, was sexy. And I think that just highlights the drinking problem that we have in this country. Ladies, no more beersies for you. And people are like half asleep. And if the only information you're getting in any election is through your television, it doesn't matter who you vote for, you'll be making an uninformed decision. You'll be making an uninformed choice. It's not a good idea. And I feel quite strongly about this, that it's not just because the media are my competition that I dislike them. I dislike them because they're betraying my nation and my countrymen at the same time. And their job description is to inform the nation, to inform my countrymen, so that they can make informed, what an original concept, informed decisions. And they're not doing that. And as a result, the country slides even further and further down the road to scumbaggery. And it's not going to stop until this concept of misinforming people for a living changes. A lot of people say that voting doesn't work, and I absolutely 100% agree with them. Voting doesn't work. Why? because none of the people who vote know who they're voting for or why what, they're voting for them.
Or what they're voting for.
Exactly. You know?
And what they're voting for extends beyond people. It extends to the politicians voting on laws. Sometimes they don't even read them.
Well, in fact, most of the time they don't read them. I mean, if you really tried hard, could you read 1,400 pages of legislation a night?
God, no.
There's just no frickin' way. And I think that's the point.
Yeah, somebody in the U.S. Senate is trying to get a law passed to make sure that we have to read legislation.
But who would read the bill before passing it is my question.
Well...
Wouldn't it be funny if they passed a bill that requires them to read the bill without reading it? Again, you can't make this stuff up, bro. You just can't make this stuff up.
No, it's too elaborate.
It's like you're creating a scheme to outfox your own scheme.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, it's like I don't know, injecting chocolate into fruit or something like that. Here, eat this; it'll be healthy.
Well, they do that.
I rest my case. Oh my God! See, only in America, bro. Only in America could you make fruit unhealthy.
No, Monsanto does it pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. And who owns it, Monsanto?
That's debatable, actually, I think.
Yeah. In fact, this is another point that I wanted to make, and it also addresses John Key's leadership, is that most of our leaders, they don't actually have loyalty to a flag or a country.
No.
Or anything good, really.
No, they have loyalty to a piece of paper. It's called a paycheck.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also partly blackmail, right? Because you got to get into those big, powerful, terrible positions. And in order to get into those positions, in order to get your shoulder tapped by the right people, you know, he like got personally invited to join the New York Federal Reserve to be on the Foreign Exchange Committee. And he served there for 2 years. And then he left at the height of his international banking cartel career to just come and be a New Zealand politician, and people think he did that because he was just a really, really nice guy. No, I think he was shoulder tapped, and they said, "Hey, bro," and he's like, "Yeah, we've got this country over here that you used to be part of, but you haven't been there for like 10 years or something like that, and I know you really don't care about it." And he's like, "Yeah, I don't. Yeah, well, why don't you go back there, bro, and we'll like finance your campaign and corrupt a whole lot of the people and maybe even kick out any of the people who criticize you within a new party or something like that, and then you can lead the country for us, and then we can come in, we can plunder it, we can destroy it, and then we'll tell you what, bro." He's like, "Yeah, we'll give you a Hawaiian holiday home." He's like, "Well, I've already got one." I say, "We'll give you another one." I mean, or you could not go, and we can expose a whole lot of the goodness knows what crap you've done. Who knows? You might have raped a chick. You might have had something dodgy to do with children. I don't know. You might have shoved 2 kilos of cocaine up your nose one night, you know, just for a laugh. And then we'll tell people about it, and then you're never going to work in this business again. And you go, "What business is that?" "The business of scumbaggery. There is nothing else but scumbaggery. And this is the core issue. Everything is an issue now, okay? The corrupt media are an issue. The health industry, that's an issue. The food industry, that's an issue. Every single thing, in every single way, every single day, is a big issue now. Why? Only one thing that ties them all together. Scumbags and scumbaggery. It's really that simple. If people are aware that corruption might be a problem, if people focus their attention on that, and that alone, simply eliminating corruption, then we might actually have a chance to gain traction on all of these issues which are currently beset by it. And I think that's the reason why I have personally made it my mission to expose scumbaggery, because it'll solve every single problem simultaneously.
Yeah, you have to go after the head of the Hydra.
Well, ultimately, if you go at the head of the Hydra, you cut one off and two more grow to take its place.
Oh, true.
The thing is, you have to actually burn it. You have to burn out, kind of like George W. Bush said, oh, we're going to smoke Osama bin Laden out of his cave. Why don't we just smoke these politicians out of their cave, you know? Smoke these Monsanto executives out of their cave, you know? We'll go to Denver or something like that, and we'll go through all the shops, and we'll just go, hey, bro, can you give us a donation of, like, as much weed as you can? We're going to smoke out all the politicians, you know? And we're going to be like all the politicians coming out of their houses, we'll be fanning it, you know, and they'll come out really baked, and they won't know what's going on, and then boom, you know, we'll just say, hey bro, you're on drugs, you're obviously not fit for work. He's like, but I take cocaine and heroin every day, and I've still done my job just fine. I go, bro, no, the game's over, son, the game's over. Go back home, all right, and just stay there, house arrest. I don't like the idea of revolution, because revolution means to go in a circle, and I don't like the idea of killing people either, right? Unless they have been given an absolutely fair trial by a jury of their peers, and there is incontrovertible evidence for a crime that is so heinous that it actually warrants the death penalty, like treason, for example. I think that treason is something that you should get the death penalty for if the offence is severe enough. Incidentally, did you know that John Key changed the treason laws in New Zealand to mean he can't be executed for being a traitor anymore? So a guy who doesn't know whether or not he's a US citizen in dual partnership with New Zealand, also, incidentally, because if that was found out, he'd be technically a traitor, changed the traitor laws to mean he can't be executed for doing what he's doing.
Man, he's either a coward or an idiot or both.
I don't know. The thing is, people, there's two things that people do. They overestimate and they underestimate. For example, they underestimate the intelligence of evil men. All right?
No, these guys are extremely intelligent, but they're cowards.
Yeah. And they also overestimate the abilities of, say, state surveillance apparatus and everything. All right? And so many people, they refuse to speak out against scumbaggery because they're actually quite literally afraid of actually having consequences. You know what I'm saying? There's a real difficulty of people out there for just accepting the part that they play in all of this. And I say that because when listeners come to me and say, Vinny, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? My answer is, why the hell aren't you doing it? Why the hell aren't you doing that? Okay? All you're doing, bro, is you're tossing the responsibility onto people who have already taken responsibility for doing something, as opposed to putting the responsibility on yourself. Once you have that realization that, oh my God, I've got a great idea, instead of going and asking for help, just go and develop the idea by yourself. All right? As far as I know...
I think that's a lost art.
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, most of the advanced technologies that we all live with today weren't made by the most massive corporations with the hugest budgets and things like that. They're usually only made by like one or two people in like a garage or in a garage somewhere, right? Never underestimate the ability of one person to just come up with a really good idea and make it happen. And it's the great myth that's been perpetuated for a very long time that you can't.
Yeah. Do we lose you?
No.
Okay. It seemed like your Skype cut out.
No, I just stopped speaking. Paused for a moment, you know. to ponder the quagmire of propagandistic thought the process is, you know. I was wondering as well how exactly people can be in love with John Key and not know anything about him. And I was like, well, actually, that's actually the only way that you can love a corrupt politician is if you know nothing about them. All right? If you don't know their past, you don't know their present, and you don't know what they're planning to do in future, sure, it's very easy to love them. But if you've been in a relationship with somebody and they constantly tell lies about you behind your back and you know about it, if they constantly steal your stuff and you know about it, if they are constantly trying to intimidate you, if they're constantly like slapping you whenever you don't do something they like, your relationship becomes very strained and you don't want to be in it anymore because you realize that you're a victim. And if the New Zealand public, and of course this applies to everybody, realize this nature, that it's basically like Stockholm Syndrome. You will begin to identify with your oppressor, with your kidnapper, even more than you will the other people who are actually being oppressed and kidnapped alongside you. And you will actually grow to love your servitude, love your master, and indeed serve them and hate other people who question them.
It's indentured servitude, but more voluntary is what it is.
There was a great movie just came out. What was it? Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
I love that movie.
It was so good. And I think the reason for me why it was so good as a truther is because I kind of identify with Captain America, how even though he was up against so many people and being afflicted by a conspiracy but behind this large, massive agency, he wasn't willing to give up. He was willing to fight, and he was willing to help regardless. And it was more the fact that when they discovered who was actually behind S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, spoiler alert for those, it was actually a massive conspiracy that had been growing inside this security agency by Nazis who had had the forethought of infecting the system and creating an algorithm behind everybody that would ever be a threat to them currently or in the future, and coming up with a plan to eliminate them all simultaneously. Right? Yeah. That's actually precisely what's going on. The pivotal point in that scene was when the artificially intelligent computer that had the consciousness of a top Nazi scientist transplanted into it, he said that we tried to take the people's freedom by force, but when you try to take it by force, they resist.
Well, I have a question about that movie, just in general. Do you think it was a warning or predictive programming?
It could be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column both. If you're aware of what the original agenda was before going into the movie, it's a call to arms. If you're unaware whatsoever and you think it's all totally fiction, it could be predictive programming.
Yeah, that was the first movie I saw after I completely became aware, and I could see all the predictive programming inside it, but it was still a fantastic movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I think the
go ahead, Dylan.
In that scene in particular that you were talking about, they say it so explicitly, if you remember. The Armanzola DAI basically says, we'll kill everyone who gets in our way with the S.H.I.E.L.D. plane, and then establish a new
world order.
That's straight from the film.
Yeah. And you can't make this up. And I have actually been documenting a lot of film dialogue and screenshots and things like that. Now, this concept is called Order Out of Chaos, or the Latin is Ordo Ab Chao, which is, incidentally, there's all these sayings, these singular phrases, which encapsulate particular degrees of Freemasonry. And the highest degree that you can reach in Freemasonry is the 33rd, and their line for the 33rd is Ordo Ab Chao. Now,
Vinny, we have about 5 minutes till we go to break.
Okay.
Just so you know.
No worries, no worries. And what is happening in films, and you see this if you think about the concept, order out of chaos, order out of chaos. Okay? Think about, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. How many times do they say Hydra's about order? It's about order, all right? And they create the chaos, and that's where they can get their order out of it, right? Even in children's cartoons, I saw this one which was, oh, what was it? I think it was like the Justice League of America or something like that. And the very, very first scene was like, who's the bad villain that Superman goes up against?
Lex Luthor?
Yeah, that's right. Lex Luthor was like the leader of the Legion of Doom at the time. Yeah. And the very opening scene of this movie is them trying to freeze and create these giant ice mountains in the polar ice caps in order to control the world or something like that. So he comes up and he says, this is going to create our new world order. And it's actually all the way through the films. And it's just like you were saying, is it subliminal predictive programming or is it a call to arms? And again, it's... those things are put into movies specifically for those in the know. And unfortunately for those in the know, there are other people who they don't want to know, who do know, who start talking about it and exposing it and lead other people to know what's going on. And that's basically what consciousness raising is really all about, is just telling people what's right in front of their face so they can see it next time before it comes and gets them.
Have you ever seen the movie Divergent? That was pretty predictive program. That was a whole lot of predictive programming in that one.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a number of screenshots of all the all-seeing eyes and Masonic floor and pyramids and everything out of it. Yeah.
The microchips in their necks in the finale of that film, the third act. How they were implanting the microchips in the people to control their mind and get them to fight for them.
And nowadays, you know, we do actually have the technology to make all of these sci-fi films a reality, and people make the mistake of thinking that because these things are actually, you know, fictionalized, that they're not based on reality, right?
Science fiction is a speculative fiction.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Mark Twain said something like, fiction has to make sense, reality doesn't.
Well, not necessarily. I'll have to disagree with them because fiction doesn't have to make sense. It has to be based on reality. And as he said, reality does not make sense. So therefore, the fiction does not have to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, only if it's based on reality, which doesn't make sense. But yeah. Same
difference. You get my point, though.
Yeah, but it's the same difference, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Because ultimately, I think what I really want to do now with my time, I mean, now that I'm no longer a YouTube sensation because they took it from me for exposing the truth, I have to think about other ways that I can contribute instead. And I've already uploaded most of my old videos to my new YouTube channel, Eastwood Vincent, if people want to go search for that YouTube channel name. You can subscribe to my channel. I want to go back up to the 16,000 subscriber mark as quickly as humanly frickin' possible. So, but I'll have to tread water until then, until such a time as I can get back to square one on that.
But if there were 16,000 people subscribed to your YouTube channel and one day it wasn't there, they got to know something's up, and they're probably looking for another YouTube channel of yours.
Yeah, that's true, but that's over a 7-year period, and not everybody who subscribes checks every day. And when they check, and you're no longer on there, there's no big message saying, "Oh my God, Vinny's been deleted" or anything. It just doesn't appear on their feed. And obviously, people are subscribed to a number of different channels, so they'll have heaps of people on their feed. And it's just you're not there anymore. So unless they're a specific fan of you and get particularly curious when you're not on their feed anymore, and then go searching for it. It's actually unlikely, and which is why out of 16,000 people, that had been subscribed to my YouTube channel, I managed to get about 500 of them back since my YouTube channel has been deleted. So that was about over a month ago.
We are approaching the break. You've been listening to The Truth Speaks. We'll be back after the break. All right, we just got back. So we were discussing predictive programming and call to arms in film. Do you want to continue with that?
Well, I don't know about that, because it's more like a predictable programming. You know, you ever feel like you know the plot of a movie before it actually goes its full course? I've actually gotten that way now, because it's like every single film, the bad guy is either the leader of the good guys or is the people who the good guys are working with in order to get the bad guys, when they're actually working with the bad guy in order to help the bad guy's aims. Right? Every single plot is like that. Every single one. And people think, that must be fiction, you know, because the bad guys don't masquerade as good guys in the real world. No, 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 no. That just doesn't happen, bro. That's so naive. My God. It's like, it's like you're 6 years old, you know, you haven't experienced anything in the world yet, and apparently everything's really new to you. So it's unfortunate, but there you go.
Well, yeah, it usually works that way. There are some films that actually surprise you, but not very many.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really that much creativity left in Hollywood, really, is there?
No.
I mean, they made Rocky VI and various other things that are just basically endless sequels. I can't. And ultimately, what's really interesting is that films have, I think maybe it's the only medium by which I actually keep up with in terms of the mainstream society. I don't keep up with television shows. I don't keep up with mainstream news or politics. I don't keep up with music in the music industry. I don't keep up with fashion. I don't keep up with cars. I don't keep up with anything that normal, that quote unquote normal people who aren't aware that there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery trying to take over the planet. I'm not into anything that they're into. And in so doing, this means that it's actually very, very difficult for me to get on with people. Unless they actually care about humanity and are aware of the dangers that beset it. It's ultimately like I've almost phased myself out of this society to a large degree, with the exception of films. You get me talking about films with somebody? Boy, oh boy, am I going to be able to tell you a hell of a lot of stuff about them. You get me going about conspiracy? Boom!
Vinny, one of these days we're going to have to do a movie show, because I'm a movie fanatic as well.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because guys like us just love to sit around and absorb stuff, but have a longer attention span than a 5-minute YouTube video that just doesn't cut it.
Yeah, I love sitting down for films. I just watched Gone Girl last weekend.
Oh, yeah? What was that about? About a girl with gonorrhea?
No, about...
Or was it about a girl that gone to Korea?
No, it was about a supposed sociopath who may have killed his wife.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's a murder mystery / thriller.
Yeah.
Man, that's a mind bender.
The other mind bender I saw the other day was The Zero Theorem. You heard of that?
Yeah, that was...
The movie was just basically messed up, right? Like, the corporation that the guy works for, its logo is an all-seeing eye, and the place where he lives and does all his work has a Masonic floor. And the guy who owns the corporation that he works for, at the very end of it, tells him about order out of chaos. You know, it's just, come on, it's pretty obvious.
Was that a New World Order-sponsored film?
Well, I mean, name me one that isn't. I mean, I've got screenshots here. Where's my screenshots folder? I want to make a doco soon, Dylan, called 33, the movie. And it's going to be simply about documenting the amount of Masonic symbolism that's actually inside movies. And here we go. This is my movie folder. I currently got 257 screenshots.
Wow.
Of Masonic floors, checkers, and all-seeing eyes and pyramids in movies and things like that. And the reason I'm doing this is because I did a documentary. I did a interview with Freighter X and James Wright, who are two fairly high level Freemasons in their own right, who have come out against the Brotherhood and their manipulation of things. And one of the documents that they managed to unearth was one that was written a long time ago. I think it might have been towards the start of the 50s or the end of the 50s, I think. And they were talking explicitly about how they were going to insert Freemasonic imagery and the imagery of ancient Egypt and the concepts of it as well into music and television and film and popular culture in general. Because they believed, and I think they are actually right, that subliminal imagery and messaging of that notion is actually so powerful that it can literally shape and sculpt society's actions. Just by putting a little pyramid or an all-seeing eye or a little black and white tiled Masonic floor in a film doesn't sound like a whole lot, does it? But what if it's in like so many of them? That nearly every mainstream film I watch now, I have to pause it every occasion, just screenshot, and then continue on with the movie. You know, almost every single one of them. It doesn't matter. They're all there. And there was an experiment.
A lot of it's propaganda.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the mechanism of how exactly they're getting us into it. Right? Like, why is it that films from the 70s all the way through to today, from every single major movie studio that you can think of, is loaded with Masonic symbolism invariably in every single film? Right? How can that... That can't happen by accident, and it's been admitted, and we've found the document that said that they were planning to do it. So I would suggest that they've done it. Who did it, though? How exactly have they got somebody in every single movie studio or producer, or is it the director, or who is it that's actually authorizing this symbolism? I mean, is it just some set decorator who just goes to the director and goes, hey, bro, you know, make this scene really awesome? And you go, what? A giant pyramid with an all-seeing eye? And the director goes, yeah, bro, why not, you know? It has absolutely nothing to do with the storyline or anything else, so let's just put it in there anyway. Does the director ask what it means? No, he doesn't. Of course he doesn't. You know, he had no idea what he's shooting. He has no idea what he's doing because he's only the director. So,
yeah, some people are willfully ignorant. Some people are just ignorant.
Yeah. Yeah. Ignorance is kind of like somebody said ignorance is a choice.
Not always.
Yeah. I agree. Not always, man. Sometimes ignorance ain't your fault. Like, let's say, for example, back in the day when slavery was legal in the United States, and then after the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, it got re-legalized in a different form. But before then, if you were a slave on a plantation and your slave master banned reading and writing, is it your fault that you're illiterate? No. Mm. I mean... You get wrapped on the knuckles and whipped several times if you were even caught so much as saying your ABCs, isn't it? So you can't blame society for being freaking stupid and following along with scumbags, telling them what to do, because they've been bred and taught from a very young age to have this as their only option for life. You can only live in ignorance. You can only live in ignoring reality. You can only live in being a douchebag. All right? You can't blame people for being a douchebag if it's all they know.
Yeah. I gotta agree with you again, man.
And I've had people argue with me on this and say, no, it's everybody's responsibility. It's every, you know, libertarians, basically, who are just like people who are in their own personal power who have lost their empathy for other people who haven't discovered it yet. You know,
libertarians are right on a lot of issues, but empathy is something that a lot of them lack.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Well, I always found it very ironic that communists say that they're really out to help people and they actually want to exterminate and enslave them at the end of the day with their politics. And libertarians are out to protect people's freedoms by telling people that they don't have any and refusing to fight adequately for them. You know? It's kind of like a false paradigm. It's like libertarianism and authoritarianism, just like the left and right paradigm, have also now become false. And
well, you can easily compare communism to libertarianism because they both exist in fantasy worlds where either everyone's communist or everyone's libertarian, or it doesn't work.
You know, actually, that's quite a fine point that you've put there, is libertarianism something that's going to turn into draconian fascism, right?
It all leads down the pipe.
Now, see, I've been wondering, what if you combine the two? Like, if you've got these two spectrums going in completely opposite directions, and they've actually had the waters muddied so much that neither real libertarianism or real socialism even exists anymore, what if you did libertarian socialism? Hey, everybody.
That would be interesting.
Hey, everybody, you've got all these rights and freedoms and what have you that are inalienable and nobody can take them off of you, and you've got all this taxation, which is now voluntary, right?
That would be extremely interesting.
See, and I'd get criticized for saying this and get called some kind of communist sympathizer or terrorist or something like that. When the fact of the matter is, I got no problem with socialism and I got no problem with capitalism. The thing that I have a problem with is authoritarianism. Somebody telling me what to do. Someone telling me to be a socialist, telling me to be a capitalist.
Corporatism.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we get caught up in labels, ultimately.
Yeah, we do. It's something we can't really... It's something that's just so subconscious.
Well, I think that's why people get offended when you question their ideals, you know? I mean, I had somebody tell me the other day that this country would be so much worse if I was in charge of it. And I go, whoa, hold on. Worse than having zero rights and having forcible 60% taxation and worse than participating in illegal foreign wars and creating more debt than God could create by himself. It'd be worse than that, would it, if I was in charge? and I don't even want to be in charge, all right? I reject having responsibility over other people, okay? I think everybody should have their own ability to be responsible, and nobody can be forced into it because it kind of voids the whole personal responsibility if they don't personally come up with ways to be frickin' responsible, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it all comes down to personal will.
Yeah. And the thing is, influence in your life can be a great thing. If I remember back, I'm thinking nearly 10 years ago now, I was going to university and a friend of mine introduced me to three things while I was down there, and that was cannabis and the comedian Bill Hicks, a documentary called The Truth and Lies in 9/11 by Michael C. Ropert from thewilderness.com. So this one person introduced me into conspiracy and comedy and weed. And he'd had no idea, and neither did I at the time, how strong an influence this would be upon me. I mean, the weed was a strong influence on me because I got busted with it, right? I'd been selling weed, as a lot of kids do in university, for like 8 months or so, and nobody'd come to me saying that they were sick. Nobody'd come to me saying that they'd been depressed by it. Nobody came to me saying that there were any consequences whatsoever from smoking that weed. So naturally, when I got arrested and had all of my stuff confiscated, all of my cash, all of my possessions, and put in handcuffs and thrown in the cells, and charged with cannabis that I didn't even have, and even though I had a full confession, they still made up evidence, and I was lucky that I didn't go to jail for a very first offense, ever, first time I'd ever been arrested by a cop, I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years for something that has never killed a single person in 10,000 years of recorded use. Now, what caused more harm, the cannabis or the law? The law. And has been that way ever since. And had I not had that big shock in my life, I may not have had the impetus to actually change it, because I was previously an establishment lover. I thought the police were honest. I thought that politicians did what they say they were going to do and voted for them as per usual. I thought that there was nothing really that wrong, you know? I just thought that the reason I was getting harassed by my fellow students in high school for a good portion of my life was just that, oh, people just didn't get me. And it wasn't that. I mean, it was that, but actually it was mostly more the fact that I didn't fit in. I wasn't a willing, compliant, mindless, pathetic, scum, slave piece of trash, right? And that's why all of my class colleagues didn't like me. That's why they abused me, because I was somebody who might have saved them. And they would have hated me for it. And that's a real problem in this modern society. We hate the people who help us more than the people who try to kill and destroy us. And I think it's necessary, to be honest. Because if you're really, really good and you're trying to help people and nobody questions you, sooner or later, down the track, you will become the very evil that you originally fought against, because people trust you, and they trust you implicitly. They trust you enough to never check up on what you're doing. And I like to openly tell people to be suspicious of me. I like to tell people that I'm not credible, because in the advent that I do turn into some form of douchebag, I would want people to expose me for it as quickly as possible and diminish my audience and basically prevent me from being able to do any further damage through people's falsely held trust in me. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we should all do.
That's a good way to look at it, yeah. You have to have that attitude, or you're really just another one of the guys trying to make a buck off of it. You need to have the courage to ask to be exposed if you ever get to that point.
And it's also about friends as well, you know, because I've got so many contacts now in the global truth community that I consider my friends and colleagues. And if you want to prevent yourself from becoming corrupt, I think they're probably the best friends to have, is people who expose corruption for a living, don't you?
Yeah. Vinny, are you available to chat for a few after the show?
I've got about 35 minutes before my next broadcast starts.
Okay. Tomorrow, are you available at all? Because I did want to talk to you about something off air, if you're all right with that.
Tomorrow's probably going to be not good for me. I need to really take tomorrow off to recuperate, because I've had to work this whole weekend, and if I don't have a day to recuperate, I burn out. But the day after might be an idea.
All right.
Yeah, we can schedule that later on. But I think what we were talking about here was about kind of like when we were talking about the films, about the call to action. Sometimes, like, there's a film that I haven't watched in a long time, and it's in my DVD wallet, and I'm still purposely not watching it for a moment when I need it. Fight Club.
I've never seen that.
You probably shouldn't watch it if you're about, yeah, it's pretty rough in terms of a film. But have you seen V for Vendetta?
Course.
Seen The Matrix?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, Fight Club came out the same year as The Matrix, and it's kind of like, it was about as inspiring for a truther to watch as The Matrix would be. Let me put it like that. It's It's about a dude who's like got so many frickin' problems in his life because he can't sleep. And so he creates a false persona and actually starts running with it. This false persona looks how he wants to look and does everything the way he wants to do it. And we all have that persona within us somewhere, but we don't have the courage to just run with it and allow it to take over. Who are you meant to be? What are you supposed to be doing? Are you happy? If you ain't happy, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. Are you still working a job that somebody else gets to tell you what to do? Does that make you happy? Are you fulfilling your creative potential? You know, these are the questions that I ask all the time, just to myself, principally, because I can't go out there and tell anybody how to live their life, and I wouldn't dream of doing so. I can only encourage them to start looking for themselves, because nobody can tell you how to live your life and have you be satisfied with it. You can try and discover how you want to live your life. Maybe you'll discover it, maybe you won't, but you shouldn't refuse to try, because then you will definitely not find it. You will definitely not find what you're looking for.
Yeah, you definitely shouldn't cheat yourself with the opportunity.
I mean, how long are you going to be on this planet, give or take? You know, are you going to be here infinitely? No? Then stop wasting your frickin' limited time, son. All right? I mean, it's like, how much more are you, I don't know. My wife has been downloading shows off the internet kind of thing, because obviously we don't have TV and we don't really like watching the ads. And it's been blessed. But she sort of like, when you run out of good shows to watch and you kind of like, oh, I wonder what this one is. And these American sitcoms that are so lame and so cheesy and the jokes are just not funny and the audience still laughs, like with that canned laughter and all of that kind of stuff. And it's almost like you're sitting there going, how can anybody actually find this in any way amusing? It's just not funny anymore. And I think once people cotton on to the fact that this plan for your life that other people have made for you, you know, your parents send you to this school, that or the other, if they weren't really on your side in the meantime, if they weren't trying to send you to something that would actually help you grow and develop and not be dependent on others to tell you how to live your life, then you're never going to find out how to live it. I mean, for me, it was just simply, I'd never fit in anyway. So basically being on the outskirts as I am and having people in the mainstream media look down on me, even though I'm taller than them and better at them at what I do than they are, I think it's actually kind of natural, as if my entire life of it has actually prepared me for a career of being in the limelight and having to deal with a constant flow of moronic, pathetic, weak people who attack me and abuse me and try to discourage me. I've lived a life full of that, and my career is full of that. And I don't listen to them because I know that they're full of it. You know what I'm saying? Somebody who doesn't know how to live their life comes and tells you how to live yours. You know? You ever had an obese person try to teach you how to be, I don't know, an aerobics instructor or something like that? You ever had somebody who's got a beard that's down to their knees try to sell you a razor? You know? Dude, you obviously don't know how to use one. And that's the thing. People are taking advice from people who have no knowledge, no experience. And they don't double check to see whether or not these people are actually full of crap in the first place.
Yeah. That's what happens. That's why the mainstream media deception has been going on for so long.
Yeah. It's questioning, you know. It's ironic because that's what a journalist is supposed to do, isn't it, Dylan?
Yeah. Journalists are supposed to be the watchdogs.
Yeah.
We've gotten to a point where the watchdogs have become
They've been muted.
You know, they've become the fox in the hen house.
Yeah. Well, the fox basically built the hen house, bro. It's like, hey.
Yeah.
You know, like two foxes are sitting there. One goes to the other. Hey, bro. He's like, what? Are you hungry? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm really hungry. Well, you know how we're hungry all the time, right? It's like, yeah. Well, what if we, instead of, you know, going into somebody else's hen house and maybe getting caught, or hurt, or getting attacked by a dog or something, what if we actually just built a hen house, got our own chickens, and just live with them, alongside them, so that the chickens will get used to us being in there, and actually expect that one day they'll be killed, and not even try to stop us? Hey, bro, that's a brilliant idea. Where'd you come up with that? And he goes, oh, I read a Henry Kissinger book once, bro.
You read his new one?
I don't read, and that's the thing. I talk to authors, but I don't read their books. I'm bloody terrible. I mean, I can read, but it's not that I. But I just, yeah, I haven't read much since leaving university. Actually, it really put me off reading in general, because when you read a novel or when you read a book, like, when I was 11, for example, I read Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park. I think it was like a 400-page book, and I read that on a school day, the whole book.
Yeah, I read one of the Game of Thrones books, which is a 1,300-page book, in two school days. So we read about the same pace, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Or at least we did, because I haven't read very much since leaving university in 2005-2006, because all the things that you were required to read in these educational institutions are full of wank, all right? Just W-A-N-K. There's nothing more but spoof on a page. It's terrible. It's just so convoluted. It makes no sense. There's no proper sentence structure. They're not capable of explaining concepts so that you're capable of understanding them. And that's the idea, to think that rambling nonsense for page after page and not making a point and not enlightening you is the height of intellectual capacity. And that's why I quit university. That I realized that it wasn't the place for me. I was somebody who could still think before going to university. Yeah, and I knew that if I stayed, I no longer would be.
It's really just a place where they teach you how to regurgitate information.
It's like mind control.
It's how my school has been.
Yeah. I just don't understand why people can put up with it, because I can't put up with it. And I think that's actually one of my problems, and the reason why I don't get along so well with many people is because I'm not prepared to accept people who don't know what they're talking about, who aren't interested in exploring the possibilities of this world, who cannot admit when they're wrong, and are generally uncurious. I mean, what is the point in associating with people like that? What do you even hope to gain? And the answer is you can't really gain anything from relationships with your inferiors. And that's why all of the people that I associate with, including you, Dylan, are people that have accomplished something that I know that I either haven't yet or can't. I mean, with your disabilities and things going through this process at such a young age, you're literally like a decade, maybe two, ahead of my development as a person. And that's why I continue to associate with you, because you're better than me in some way. Okay? And that's the only way I've found throughout life to actually improve the person that you are, is to almost exclusively associate with people who can show you how to do it, if only you would listen.
Yeah, that's a good way to live. You have to be able to learn something from everyone. Has something you can learn. It's just, is it useful?
And most of the time, unfortunately, it's like, I recall, you know, speaking of university, we were talking about libertarianism before, and these two libertarians, you know, arguing, and they're just like young, they're probably about maybe, I don't know, five years younger than me at the time, and they were talking about politics and such like that, and you know how you can kind of hear a snippet of a conversation and you hear something so stupid that you just know that these two people are basically retarded, all right? And they just, and they're at university and they think they're smart, you know? That's our problem in this society, isn't it? The most,
you know, that everyone thinks they're smart.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, in specificity, those who are the most stupid and the least capable of actual independent thought are those who think they are the most intelligent and most capable of independent thought when they haven't actually had an independent thought in their frickin' life. And so I insert myself into this conversation and I ask them what they're talking about, and after about 15 seconds or so, they actually just walk away from me. Literally. Like, that's how forcible their own protection of their ignorance bubble is. It's like, oh my god, this guy's like a big sharp needle, and I'm just a weak bubble of ignorance. I don't want him to pop me. Let's walk away. You know, hey, that reminds me. I thought about pretending to be a slave. You know, like a willing, loving, ignorant slave, and kind of like I don't know what I'd dress in, but just kind of want to like go up to John Key with a megaphone and, you know, prostrate at his feet, you know, like get down on my knees and my hands on the ground in front of him. Oh, master, I am a worm. I love you. Please give me your attention, master. I need it. I cannot survive without your light. I have the music. I need the desires of your filth and disgust. Oh, master, please don't forsake me. I can just imagine everybody, like, you should be cracking up laughing. You know, you got to go do this to everybody, like Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Oh, Biden! Master! Please give me your light! I want to serve you!
You're really a character.
I mean, ultimately, I think the best people in life are their own character, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's great.
It's kind of like The Big Lebowski. You know what's really great about the movie The Big Lebowski is they got really, really good characters. And they're actually characters, like the kind of character that you would meet in real life and you think, man, that guy's a character. And they're probably based off real people that these people have seen in real life or something like that. And then they just fictionalize them a little bit so that people can't even believe that such a person exists. Yeah.
Ultimately, that might be better for the world in some ways.
Yeah. I just think, you know, we need to embrace the madness a little bit. Because it's kind of like I don't know how to describe it. Madness is sort of like a river, and you can either plant yourself right in the middle of it as a big immovable stone,
Or go against the current and get swept up.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you're going to get swept away eventually, but sometimes it's better to just go with the flow. You know? What's the worst thing that can happen? And the worst thing that can possibly happen if you try to kind of go with the flow in terms of the modern servitude and insanity is that you become permanently insane because of it. I mean, I don't understand. I do understand, but I wish that people who know the truth about how bad TV is for them would just stop watching TV and see how their life changes, kind of thing. I was just on a show just before coming on here, Dylan, with Brad and Thunder from the Thunder and Light team. They make holographic devices that can affect room temperatures and things like that. It's pretty advanced stuff. And it was quite interesting that when you try to come up with an invention that people think is totally advanced, out of this world, advanced technology, etc., that actually helps people, unlike the FDA and the AMA, who are basically America's leading cause of death, they get called quacks and crazy people and things like that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, some of that is by design.
Yeah. And I believe that we can change this. You know, we can change the whole system all the way around by simply exposing scumbaggery wherever it may see. You know, like a big brother campaign, see scumbaggery, expose scumbaggery, you know. If somebody's a liar, if somebody's a psychopath, if somebody's a pedophile, if somebody's a murderer, if somebody's a war criminal, if somebody's a corrupt CEO, if somebody is taking payoffs from lobbyists and they're trying to represent their constituents in Congress or in the Senate or even in the executive branch, if they're taking payoffs, that's scumbaggery and it needs to be exposed. And I think as once humanity in general, once enough people, maybe even only 3 to 5% of the population expose every bit of scumbaggery they see on a daily basis, nobody will be able to get away with anything anymore. And you'll actually then be able to have fertile soil with which to plant the seeds of our new, fair, scumbaggery-free society.
And that'll probably last for about 50 to 100 years, and the cycle may end up starting again.
Yeah, and which is why, in order to perpetuate it for as long as possible, but also to allow for growth and change within the society, you need to be teaching people, much like Hugo Chavez did, what their rights are, why they have those rights, and also my concept of it is follow what the Founding Fathers said, you know, that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And for the last 100 years, there has not been enough vigilance.
Yeah, we've been completely slacking off.
Exactly. Now, I think that if you could drum it into people, if we could use those mind control techniques of repetition constantly in people's face all the time, expose scumbaggery, don't put up with corruption, don't allow psychopaths to hurt the people you love, don't allow people with no conscience to have control of your nation, don't allow them to have control of resources. If people are corrupt and they have power, then they can do damage. If people are corrupt, in general, the worst they could do is probably snatch a lady's handbag or maybe murder her in order to get her handbag, as opposed to drum up $14 trillion worth of debt in 8 years or murder millions of people in an illegal war. Okay?
We've had a lot of those.
Yeah. And it's happening all the time, and this is because to expose a scumbag actually also exposes yourself at the same time. This is what I learned with my conflict with Pete Santilli when he stole the Guerrilla Media Network name off of me, is that because I exposed him, he made me and people I loved a target. And it's very, very difficult for those with conscience to go up against those who do not, because those people with conscience have rules that they will not break. I won't kill children. I won't lie about people. I won't initiate force. I won't do any of these things. And that gives psychopaths an evolutionary advantage over the rest of us, because morality is something that
I forget where the quote came from, but basically it said to defeat a monster, you have to become one.
Denzel Washington in Training Day. To protect the sheep, you got to catch the wolf, and it takes a wolf to catch a wolf. Now, I'm a narcissist, right? And all psychopaths are narcissists. But not every narcissist is a psychopath. And part of the reason why I dislike psychopaths so much is because I see so much of my own behavior coming out of their mouths, being exuded through their existence. And it's kind of like a slap in the face to me, because those things that I had to work really hard on to get over, I used to steal from people, I used to lie, I used to be cruel and callous and hurt people's feelings on purpose, just for fun, because I was hurting inside. And I think it took me getting this career going to actually teach me that who I was wasn't who I had to be, that I actually had a choice. I can use my personality flaws as a means of understanding my enemy better than others, and in so doing, make me better at resisting them and better at predicting their behavior and opposing it than other people. But I can't use their tactics because I know that I'm corruptible, and I can slip into that kind of state of who I used to be if I'm not careful. If you stick your head into hell and you start staring at it, sometimes it stares back. And I do see a lot of people in this movement who don't acknowledge these weaknesses in themselves. And in so doing, they allow, just like corruption, if you're not suspicious of it, it will allow it to grow. If you don't expose the scumbaggery within yourself, you can't really expose scumbaggery in others.
Lost for words.
Yeah. Well, I think this is kind of like one of the really most powerful lessons in my life, is that you can't really become your enemy. You in order to defeat them, there has to be some other way. I don't know what that way is yet. I don't know how good can oppose evil without eventually becoming it. But I will endeavor to find a way.
And I'm with you on that. I just don't think we've seen any examples of another way. But hey, let's create one.
Well, see, the thing I like about you, Dylan, is that you're still open to possibility. You haven't gotten old and seen the bitter, cynical, jaded kind of bullcrap that most grown-ups go through. You know, and this is something I noticed when I was a kid, is that a lot of the adults that were trying to teach me, you know, like in school and what have you, were dumber than me.
Or more ignorant.
Yeah, I mean, how exactly is somebody who's more ignorant and dumber than me, while I'm a child and they're an adult, going to teach me anything of value? You know how much I learned of value in the entirety of high school and elementary school and university? Something that was actually practical, of benefit, that I actually wound up using in later life?
Nothing. Probably about the same that I have.
Just nothing. And then people will say, oh, but what about maths? What about English, etc.? And I go, well, I learned basic maths from my parents. I learned how to speak English from my parents. My mother is a poet. My father's an orator and a businessman and an entrepreneur. Okay? My English teacher actually put me down what they call SAT scores. I'm not sure what the equivalent is on the US scale.
It's still SAT.
GPA average or something like that.
Oh, GPA. SAT is a test that we take. Oh,
okay, so you've got the same test. And I was like a pretty bum student, like really. I was not getting very good grades whatsoever. And I was really depressed one time. My English teacher actually, she broke the law and showed me what my SAT results were in order to encourage me. Now, she showed me the vocabulary scores that I got. Now, my vocabulary was in the top three in the school. And the people who were the top two were the what we call the ducks of the school, the D-U-X, the number one students, as in they got A+ and nothing less kind of students. And I was only slightly below them in vocabulary score. my ability to remember words and actually use them in a sentence and be able to apply and understand radical concepts and be able to compress them in a linguistic fashion so that people who are even unaware of the concept's existence in the first place will indeed have a solid understanding of them after I've finished explaining it. And this was pretty encouraging at the time. And I've had many people like that throughout my life who've come up to me when I've been down in the dumps or persecuted by somebody else and seen what I'm capable of and try and help me, try and encourage me. And those people may have no idea just how much effect they've had on my life. I probably can't even quantify it. But I do know that those small little influences, however many there may have been, did make a difference. So anybody who tells you, and this is usually jaded adults saying this, that you can't change the world, you can't do this, you can't do that, or that's never going to happen, you know, they're basically people who haven't had enough encouragement in their life. They haven't had people that are better at something than them come along and tell them something they don't already know, so that they can actually improve themselves. And that's a very sad, sad state of affairs, because it means that this disease of cancerous lies and deception and hopelessness that has been instilled upon the population doesn't show any signs of giving up its fight. And the end game of this, as has been the end game of every tyrant throughout history, is to dumb everybody down, because it's so much easier. I'm sure gamers will understand this concept. It's so much easier to kill and attack bots who can't think for themselves than it is to go up against other thinking people in a game scenario.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why I don't use bots when I play games.
Yeah. Incidentally, it's why I use bots, but I make sure that they outnumber me like 4-1. You know, I just make sure that it's not a fair fight, at least in some way that I can.
Yeah, I prefer to play on my own, so unless I don't want to get attacked and completely fail, so if I'm online, at least I can put up a fight.
But I think this is sort of a warrior spirit that we all have, you know, this passion, this love for life. And despite that, I'm still being cynical and jaded about a whole bunch of stuff. And I even find myself saying that to other people. Oh, that can't happen. Oh, that won't happen. Oh, that's being unrealistic or whatever. But I also still acknowledge the possibility that not only could I be wrong and the other person be right, but also that they could be wrong about just how effective they could be. You know?
Yeah, I mean, to eliminate the possibility of something ever happening is probably more closed-minded than just being just allowing yourself to be dumbed down. You have to acknowledge the possibility of everything, but also acknowledge when it's a low probability.
How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you've under mind control. It's about right, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess I'm under mind control. That's never a question I've asked myself.
Yeah.
Until now.
But don't be afraid, because you're not the only one. See? And just because you're under mind control, doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs about it. You know, there's a possibility, of course, that I'm still under mind control, even though I'm questioning it constantly questioning it. How are my thoughts made? Did I come up with that concept, or did somebody else come up with the concept and I merely repeated it over without thinking about it myself and actually intellectualizing it and testing it in order to see that it's valid before mindlessly repeating it? And ultimately, that actually happens with a lot of the things that I say and I do. And I have to admit that. And I'm one of the few radio show hosts who actually will admit these things that I admit about my weaknesses and my inabilities to handle certain situations and that kind of thing. It's because the personality type that's required for this job is, in particular, the personality type that's required for longevity and success in talk radio is more or less sort of like a watered-down version of hubris, right? Being able to, thinking that you know what's going on and being really self-confident about it.
Well, Vinny, that's why you're one of the most well-known hosts, because you're real. You acknowledge your weaknesses. I think that's going to be something new that all the major hosts are going to have to start doing, because I think it's becoming a journalistic standard for this sort of thing.
Mm. And in the next 5 minutes before we go to break, I mean, it's kind of like you've got two choices. You've got the authoritarian and the libertarian, right, as we were talking before. And the basis of authoritarianism is you need somebody else to tell you what to do so that you don't turn into a scumbag, all right? Libertarian says you have to tell yourself and force yourself to do the right thing so that you don't turn into a scumbag. And I'm far more on that side of the spectrum than having somebody else tell me what to do. However, if I never had people telling me right from wrong, if I never had the wrong things done to me so that I could actually feel what it's like to have injustice done upon you, I probably wouldn't have developed the necessary empathy to give up my life potential of making millions of dollars selling goodness knows what. Whatever I'd gotten into, I do really good at. And unfortunately, to be really good at telling the truth and helping activists who the mainstream media ignore, there aren't a whole lot of financial rewards inherent in that. There really aren't. I've managed to, over the last 7 years or so, be capable of earning enough through people's voluntary donations so that I don't have to have a slave job, and I can literally spend all my time working without worrying exactly how big my paycheck is or where that or where the next paycheck is coming from. This has allowed me to kind of grow and prioritize, because when you've got the time to think and you don't have to pay for your existence and you don't have to leave the house every single day to go and do things that you don't want to do, it allows you to develop who you are and what you want to do at a far more productive and indeed a geometric rate. And
we're down.
I know, with 3 minutes. Yeah. And I think if I don't know where I'm going to end up in this journey, Dylan, is the thing. And what my life experience has taught me is that the more successful I am at doing something good, the more people will hate me for it. And I've basically gotten used to the idea that even though I feel like I'm a good person doing the right thing, I will be chastised, I will be attacked, and I will have a lot of people try to sabotage me, steal my ideas, or undermine me, or talk bad about me behind my back. And I've kind of had to accept that as a possibility, that even though I'm doing the right thing, the wrong thing will continue to be done to me, and the more right things that I do, the worse wrong things will be done to me.
Vinny, where can people find you online?
You can go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. Or you can just search Vinny Eastwood on your NSA-related search engines. They tend to know where I am. And my new YouTube channel is Eastwood Vincent. And I encourage people to listen to the shows, and also go through the back catalogue, because I've done thousands of shows. Thousands of shows. I haven't even turned 30 yet, and I've done more work than most truthers have done in a lifetime. And this is because I've sacrificed every minute, every hour, and every dollar of my life to make sure people who are smarter than me, who come up with research that I can't do myself, actually get given a platform to be heard on the world stage when the world platforms will not give them a chance.
That's our job here.
If you ain't doing that, then what the hell's the point?
Absolutely. You can find me on Shaken Wake Radio Network, Wednesdays 5 to 7 Eastern Standard Time, both days. And you can also find me here, Saturdays 8 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. You can find me on the Liberty Beacon Media Network, Wednesdays 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. And subscribe to my YouTube channel, The Truth Speaks. Vinny, thanks for coming on. It's always fun to have you on.
Well, thank you. All right, well, I've got to jump on another show now because they also need to enjoy the fun.
All right, Vinny. Can we schedule that talk for Monday for me?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's catch up on Facebook, bro. I've got to go.
All right, see ya.
Cheers, bro.